Thanks for listening on Wednesday, July 18th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, it is Pentagon Solutions, where we dig into the challenges that the Defense Department is dealing with and talk about the potential solutions for those challenges. We hear from voices both inside and outside the Defense Department, and today we're hearing from voices in industry. Just this morning, the House Armed Services Committee holding a hearing called Sequestration Implementation Options and the Effects on National Defense Industry Perspectives. The witnesses at this hearing included Robert Stevens, the chairman and CEO of Lockheed Martin, Sean O'Keefe, chairman and CEO of EADS North America, David Hess, the president of Pratt & Whitney, and Della Williams, the president of Williams Pyro, each of them appearing to give testimony on this subject to the House Armed Services Committee. And the first witness at this hearing was Mr. Stevens of Lockheed Martin.
Chairman McKeon, Ranking Member Smith, distinguished members of the committee, I thank you very much for this opportunity to express our industry perspectives on the impact of sequestration. With your permission, I will submit a prepared statement for the record and offer now a brief summary.
No objections, so ordered. And that would go for each of you.
Thank you, sir. As Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Lockheed Martin, I'm enormously proud to represent 120,000 hardworking, patriotic women and men who are the foundation of our business. We're a global security company operating in 50 states and 75 countries. Our workforce includes 61,000 scientists and engineers and 26,000 military veterans. Year in and year out, our company consistently hires the largest number of graduating engineers from U.S. universities compared to any other company. We receive more than 1 million resumes each year from highly talented people who have a strong desire to deliver the next generation of technology that will help keep our nation safe and secure and ensure the United States leads the world. Lockheed Martin is also the largest provider of information technology services to the federal government, and we have a business presence in virtually every federal department or agency, including the Social Security Administration, the National Institutes of Health, the Veterans Administration, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Federal Aviation Administration, just to name a few. So the men and women of our company play an important role in America's future, and we all take that responsibility seriously. Sequestration jeopardizes that future. From a national security perspective, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta has spoken in the strongest possible terms against sequestration. He said this process will have catastrophic consequences for our nation's defense, and he described it as a meat axe. It is. Sequestration's automatic trigger and across-the-board cuts were developed independent of any correlation with national security strategy, force structure, technology needs, or operational reality, and those cuts will be detrimental. From an industry perspective, our near-term horizon is completely obscured by a fog of uncertainty. With just 167 days remaining until it takes effect, we have little insight as to how sequestration will be implemented and no insight into which programs will be curtailed, which sites will be closed, which technologies will be discontinued, which contracts will be reformed, and which suppliers, particularly small businesses who are so vital to our supply chain, will be shut down or severely crippled. Most tragically, we fear we will be unable to provide the equipment and support needed by our military forces, and we are unable to reliably estimate how many employees are going to lose their jobs and how many families are going to be disrupted. It might be flattering to believe that our industry is so robust and so durable that it could absorb the impact of sequestration without breaking stride, but that is a fiction. The impact on our industry would be devastating, with a significant disruption in ongoing programs and initiatives, leading to facility closures and personnel reductions that would severely disrupt advanced manufacturing operations, erode engineering expertise, and accelerate the loss of skills and knowledge. In short, it will undermine our aerospace and defense industrial base, which I believe is one of the crown jewels of the American economy and is strategically vital to our country. Beyond defense, I think the broader consequences of sequestration also are not well understood. The abruptness and across-the-board nature of the cuts will hit hard virtually all domestic discretionary accounts as well. And since most of our domestic departments and agencies don't have substantial capital acquisition accounts like the Department of Defense, that means the cuts will come from people, through significant workforce furloughs and personnel reductions that will likely constrain agencies from providing essential support and services and fulfilling their missions. In short, sequestration constitutes blunt force trauma. It's likely to tear the fabric of our industry, adversely affect our national security, and impair our domestic agencies. Mr. Chairman, I don't profess to have the wisdom or expertise to give counsel to this committee or to the Congress on the precise path forward to resolve all the fiscal challenges that our nation is facing. But I've spent decades of my professional working life in the national security arena, and I've never been as concerned over the risk to the health of our industry and our government enterprise. Sequestration has been described many times to me as a doomsday device, as a threat that was designed never to happen. But the effects of sequestration are being felt right now throughout our industry. Every month that goes by without a solution is a month of additional uncertainty, deferred investment, lost talent, and ultimately increased cost. Respectfully, I urge you to take action to stop the sequestration process and ask that you do so soon.
That's Robert Stevens. He is the chairman and CEO of Lockheed Martin, testifying this morning at a House Armed Services Committee hearing on sequestration. You're hearing it on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Mr. Stevens succeeded in the witness spotlight by Sean O'Keefe, chairman and CEO of EADS North America. You'll hear him next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Consolidation requires fresh thinking. Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VCE V-Block systems seamlessly integrate leading compute, network, and storage technologies to uniquely support highly virtualized mixed workload environments. This improves your data center utilization and adaptability while dramatically lowering your costs.
VCE V-Block systems are the next evolution of IT. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal. That's vce.com/federal.
And I can just read on the plane without any problem. Like now, when I'm on the airplane and somebody has a Kindle, they either have to turn on the light because a Kindle doesn't have any light built into it, or they also have these little small lights that clamp onto the side of the Kindle that lights it up because the Kindle is not a backlit screen. On the other hand, when I go to the swimming pool and there's bright sunlight, I cannot use the iPad.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
This is a transformative time for the Department of Defense. The military is progressing toward a smaller, nimbler force capable of rapidly responding to any threat around the globe. Secure, next-generation communications capabilities are essential, ensuring personnel can get the information they need from virtually any location, anytime, on any compatible device. Microsoft offers today's military leaders the next wave of technologies, providing advanced security features without compromising productivity and mission effectiveness, all at a price that makes sense. From the front lines to the command center to the Pentagon, Microsoft and its global partner network are working with defense leaders to create solutions that not only meet but anticipate today's service member needs. Whether it's providing secure online collaboration and editing capabilities or voice and video through unified communications, Microsoft is equipping warriors in motion with the familiar technology they use every day to get the job done. That's real impact for tomorrow's military. Learn more about defense IT solutions at Microsoft.com/DOD.
The Cloud First Report, presented by the cloud computing experts at GTSI and HP.
The Defense Department has released its first strategy for cloud computing. The plan calls for a department-wide cloud architecture, but it will be delivered by multiple cloud providers. The Defense Information Systems Agency will serve as DOD's cloud broker. It'll be in charge of continuing to develop DOD's private cloud, but coordinate the delivery of cloud services provided by commercial companies as well. DOD also plans to lean heavily on the new FedRAMP program, the government's new process for cloud security.
Public, private, hybrid. The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
The Energy Department is cutting energy at home by retrofitting its headquarters. I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, DOE's Jen McDonald will tell us what a white roof really is. And we'll find out how a tech-savvy diplomat became a leader in human resources. Laura Williams is a Causey Award winner. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You heard Emily there mention a Causey Award winner, and you can find all of our Causey coverage at federalnewsradio.com. Search term Causey Awards. On Pentagon Solutions today, listening to leaders in the industry talking to the House Armed Services Committee this morning, Sean O'Keefe is chairman and CEO of EADS North America. And in this highlight, he lays out his company's view of what will happen to the defense industrial base if sequestration takes effect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to appear here today on behalf of the 90,000 members of the National Defense Industrial Association, which I serve as chair. In addition to representing EADS, which is the world's largest aerospace and defense company. But I'm particularly cursed by a memory of how this particular provision of public finance was first introduced into the federal process as a mechanism to enforcing some measure of discipline, given my prior public service experience. Graham Rudman Hollings, when it was enacted in the mid-'80s, was intended particularly to be indiscriminate, by its precision to be exacting. Across the board, by precisely the same amounts, the logic was, 25 years ago it was enacted, was that the method was a substitute for rational judgment and choice of priorities, because the process had failed to reach consensus on what those priorities would be. And so therefore, an exacting precise amount with an indiscriminate application was enacted. The logic was also that this method was devoid of any priority selection and that nothing would be more affected, and so therefore there were no priorities. If everything is the same priority, there are no priorities of any substance. And finally, the logic was this resource management mechanism was so stupid that the threat of it would be a prompt all by itself to public leaders to avoid it at any cost. That was the logic, quaint as it sounds 25 years ago. But it's been adopted a year ago, as a mechanism now of enforcement following the debt limit extension provisions that were then subsequently enacted in order to force this again. The consequences of this are serious. I think Bob Stevens has talked through a variety of very particular efforts that would be applicable. But the percentage that is to be applied, while it ranges anywhere in the single digits to very low double digits, may sound like that's not going to be much of an impact, masks the real consequence of this. The most severe is the administrative disruption that will likely cost almost as much as what this mechanism is designed to save. So by however much is sequestered, taken across the board, without priority, without particular application, to any sense of its value one way or the other, in which body armor contracts are valued at exactly the same value as cutting the grass at military bases, that the consequence of that may sound like it's going to be exacting in its precision, but indeed the administrative effort to implement it will be much more disruptive than anything else. It's going to force inefficiencies, as it has in the past, in much smaller applications of this provision, and that's been demonstrated and documented in terms of its extent. It's going to implement and force any number of contract penalties. Will terminate a variety of different programs because there are some efforts to select within the amounts that are identified by the very wonkish-sounding program, project, and activity definitions. And even those definitions, I think, as Congressman Smith highlighted, are still in dispute and argument over exactly how they'd be applied. So that will extend this even further. Unit costs will certainly increase as there is a change in quantities by contract. The cost of capital for smaller second and third tier suppliers will almost certainly go up as financing expenses just to meet the cash flow requirements as progress payments are disrupted. And then once that's settled, Prompt Pay Act penalties will then be applied as well. Again, Bob Stevens spoke to the, as well as the chairman spoke to the WARN Act provisions. That's going to be an across-the-board disruptive effort, and indeed that's already started in some cases by notification to many of you and your colleagues, as well as governors in 50 states, that indeed this provision may in fact have to be implemented. So it's already begun. The impact on second and third tier suppliers, of which the National Defense Industrial Association, most of its members represent or are part of that, is going to be very, very significant in that regard. And the disruption in that particular market is going to be one that may not sound like, again, the percentage sounds like a very big deal. But just take, for example, some of the suppliers to my company, EADS, which does purchases $15 billion worth of commercial and other activities in the United States every year on an annual basis. 70% of what we do is commercial, 30% is related to public contracts. And yet many of the suppliers are much the same for aerospace articles that apply in some circumstances to defense equipment, in other cases, of which, again, we do roughly 30%. The other bulk of it is towards commercial side of the equation. The cost of doing business for many of the second and third tier providers is going to go up significantly because some of those providers will elect to either exit one element of the market, defense in particular, or public spending in particular. And as a consequence, the options for competition to maintain cost competitiveness is going to become much stiffer. In the $15 billion a year that my company invests every year to purchase goods and services in the United States, some of those sub-tier providers will exit the market. And when they do, there'll be less choice, and the cost of doing business will go up. In the defense market, that's particularly true since those same products, identical in many respects in a commercial or military sale, costs in a public market at least on the order of 20% more to do business. Those suppliers who are providing in both markets will exit the public defense market faster than any other just to shed that 20% overhead that it costs to do business in it. And so as a consequence, it becomes an easy choice or one that they're driven to in order just to survive in many cases. And that's an opportunity at the same time to examine what that cost of doing business is uniquely to the public sector. If every article or most require roughly the same comparability of its application in a commercial or a defense context, why does it cost that much more just to sell to the public? And that has an opportunity for reexamination. The Defense Business Board has advocated what's now called a regulatory holiday. Some during the 1990s in the post-Cold War period, the administration at that time referred to this as a procurement holiday. Let's just stop buying things because we've got enough of an inventory, no need to buy more. Well, the same could be applied in these particular cases in which 20% of the cost that's applied just to do business with the public could be reexamined on a case-by-case basis, but to demonstrate why it ought to stay there as opposed to be just accepted and therefore be justified on each occasion. The business board has come up with defense business board has come up with a very creative method to do that, and that's to be advanced as one method in the alternative to looking at a mindless across-the-board application of no priority, everything is a priority kind of reduction. And that's an overhead that I would encourage is an opportunity to really look at what those expenses could be to yield a lower cost and ultimately the kind of savings that are to be accrued. Lost in all this, though, and maybe this is the most important element, is that while there will be, there's no doubt, almost to equal proportion, a reduction in this area in the domestic discretionary appropriations, as again, as Congressman Smith described, it nonetheless is going to resonate in a different way. We're looking at dominantly public servants or delivery of public services that require personnel. And as a result, how the federal government goes about the process of determining how those reductions will be made is something yet to be heard from. So while there may be a prospect of fewer TSA agents at the airports on any given day, or flight disruptions as a consequence of the FAA air traffic controllers not being asked to report for duty that day, and there'll be fewer research grants because the NIH or the National Science Foundation is withholding the grant that was required to a university for some research activity. All those are severe impacts. But by comparison to the impact that will be particularly on the armed forces of the United States, men and women in service who voluntarily are there in order to defend us, that impact is going to be particularly profound on them and their families. And it is worthy, therefore, of consideration of what that consequence will be that's far greater than anything we're talking about here this morning on the industry.
Mr. O'Keefe, are you close to...
I'm done. I simply want to add I commend the committee for seeking some resolution to this issue, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
That's Sean O'Keefe, the chairman and CEO of EADS North America, at the House Armed Services Committee hearing on sequestration this morning on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pratt & Whitney's David Hess next, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
This week's Experts in Health topic is breast cancer detection, featuring Dr. Kathy Wolcott, a family practitioner with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the Kaiser Permanente Silver Spring Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Wolcott at Kaiser Permanente. We understand that early detection and treatment of breast cancer can increase the chance of survival, which is why Mid-Atlantic Permanente physicians of all specialties proactively review each member's electronic medical record to see when she had her last mammogram. A woman may come in for an ophthalmology appointment for an eye issue, but she can leave with her mammogram appointment in hand, often having the option to complete the mammogram in the very same medical center that day. Only Kaiser Permanente doctors from all specialties can do this. It's no surprise that we have the highest mammography screening rate in the region.
Dr. Wolcott was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Breast cancer screening rate as reported in HEDIS 2011.
Hey, dude, the new HD Radio digital entertainment system in my new Ford Escape is amazing.
Yeah, but I'm not ready for a new car.
Dude, you can make your ride better. Just visit a local car stereo shop or Best Buy or Walmart. Ask for HD Radio technology. It's available from all the best brands. Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, Sony, JVC.
Is it expensive?
Dude, you can choose from more than like 40 different models at all different prices. Just visit HDRadio.com. You'll see.
Okay, then will you stop calling me dude?
Come on, man. Get more.
HD Radio. More radio, more value.
Here in the metro area, you'll find interesting people, top-notch restaurants, great sports teams, and plenty of monuments and museums. And here is where you'll find your next career, as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. A career in the U.S. Coast Guard offers you stability, excellent federal benefits, and a flexible work schedule. So if you're looking for that next opportunity, consider the U.S. Coast Guard, where your career is how you serve. To find out more, visit the United States Coast Guard website at coastguardcivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Please join Jim Fleisig Tuesday, July 24th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This program will focus on mobility progress and best practices in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from the Air Force, DISA, and DHS-CBP. Don't miss The Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, July 24th at noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Appian, Sourcefire, Citrix, and Immix Group.
More kidney stones. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. A study finds the number of Americans with kidney stones has gone up. At UCLA, Charles Scales looked at National Health Survey data. He says about 1 in 20 people had kidney stones in 1994. By 2007 to 2010, it was 1 in 11.
Obesity, diabetes, and gout were all strongly associated with having kidney stones. This is very important because all these conditions are preventable and directly related to diet and lifestyle.
For all three, weight control is crucial. For kidney stones, Scales recommends drinking plenty of fluids and having a balanced diet low in sodium and animal protein and with a moderate amount of calcium. The study presented at a meeting of the American Urological Society was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The House Armed Services Committee looking at sequestration, and you're hearing about it today on Pentagon Solutions. Title of this hearing, Sequestration Implementation Options and the Effects on National Defense Industry Perspectives. Witnesses you've heard from so far, Robert Stevens, Chairman and CEO of Lockheed Martin, and Sean O'Keefe, Chairman and CEO of EADS North America. The next witness at this hearing from just this morning, David Hess, the President of Pratt & Whitney.
Chairman McKeon, Ranking Member Smith, and other members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today regarding the serious matter of the potential for sequestration and the implications it has to our defense industry. As you know, I wear two hats currently. One is the president of a $13 billion company that employs more than 36,000 employees worldwide, and second as the chairman of the Aerospace Industry Association, which represents 300 aerospace companies across the United States, which collectively account for about 90% of the revenues for the entire for the aerospace and defense industry. I commend the committee on assembling such a representative group of witnesses to provide diverse answers based on the different challenges faced by each of us in the coming months. As chairman of AIA, it has been my privilege to visit Capitol Hill on numerous occasions to outline what we see with regard to sequestration, the potential to affect over 1 million highly skilled, highly compensated aerospace and defense-related jobs. AIA's second-to-none advocacy campaign has been spreading throughout the country with grassroots rallies highlighting the importance of fixing sequestration versus suffering its consequences. As an industry, we're already seeing the impacts of potential sequestration budget cuts today. Companies are limiting hiring and halting investments, largely due to the uncertainty about how sequestration cuts would be applied. At our UTC sister division, Sikorsky, the leadership has already indicated that, given this environment, if they had to choose right now between investing an internal R&D dollar between a commercial and defense program, they would choose commercial programs because of the uncertainty in the defense budget. And that's considering there's a fair amount of uncertainty in the commercial environment right now. Equally concerning are the impacts of sequestration on the domestic side as it relates to Homeland Security, Border Security, Air Traffic Control, TSA, and other agencies. The sequestration threats facing other government agencies, contracts, and workforce affects our member companies' ability to do business safely and effectively. In the near term, some clarity from the Office of Management and Budget about how sequestration cuts would be implemented would be helpful in terms of avoiding some of these impacts. Regardless of how the cuts are implemented, the consequences for the industry would be dire. The Defense Industrial Base Task Force, commissioned by Secretary of Defense Bonetta, has reported that sequestration level cuts would result in the closure of production lines, a layoff of skilled workers, severe curtailment of research and development investments, and a reduced ability to respond to the emergent needs of the U.S. military. However, today I'm here as the president of Pratt Whitney to offer my view on how sequestration will affect us directly and share with you how the effects Secretary Panetta mentioned, are becoming a reality for us. At Pratt Whitney, we build jet engines for both the commercial and military marketplace. As you know, our future military base market consists primarily of the F-135 engine for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, while we're also proud of our engine chosen to power the next generation KC-46 aerial refueling tanker for the U.S. Air Force. These engines will not really add to our production business until 2016 or later. With the end of the production run of the F-22 engine this year and potentially the end of the production run for our engine for the C-17 next year, the F-135 engine is our future for our military business. Already, the decline in defense spending is negatively affecting the F-35 production ramp and subsequently affecting our engine production. As you know, $487 billion in defense budget cuts already announced has pushed out 179 F-35 Joint Strike Fighter aircraft between 2012 and 2020. Original projections just a few years ago had us building over 100 F-135 engines per year. This year, we will build just over 50, so about half of that number. Next year, our F-135 production will actually decrease. And if sequestration were to take effect, that number would decline dramatically. It's not just new engine deliveries that are impacted at Pratt. Spare parts are the key to keeping our manufacturing base healthy and sustainable. But as a result of the announced $487 billion defense budget cuts, flight hours have already been cut back, and sequestration would result in still further reductions. This undercuts demand for our spare parts and overhaul work. For my company, this situation poses both a workforce and a supply-based problem. As the F-22 program winds down, I'm currently transitioning many of these workers to the F-135 production, but this is extremely difficult, getting the near-term production decline I described earlier. With sequestration, it will be even more difficult to retain those highly skilled employees. And quite simply, my workforce is aging, specialized, and highly compensated. If and when we do ramp back up production, the learning curve for new employees is steep and will affect production, quality, and training, all of which adds time and cost. Pratt Whitney is somewhat unique because, from a production standpoint, a jet engine is a jet engine, whether it goes in a military aircraft or a commercial aircraft. This allows us to absorb disruptions absorb some of the disruptions better than small companies in the supply base. For a short time, I may be able to move employees between military and commercial programs, assuming I have an increase in demand for the commercial area. I can, if forced to, take some risk if there is to be a reward at the end of the day, but this is like putting a proverbial Band-Aid on a bullet wound. In terms of our supply base, they too are currently struggling with volume. Many of them are small businesses making specialized parts for military engines that simply cannot survive another production decline or disruption. We continue to hear from our suppliers that if further cuts take place, they would be forced to lay off employees, curtail investment, and pursue other businesses. One large supplier has told us, quite frankly, they don't believe the DOD will ever produce the number of engines in the Joint Strike Fighter program. This uncertainty makes suppliers less willing to enter long-term agreements and drives our cost up today. If sequestration were to go in effect, no amount of juggling is going to preserve my workforce or help me maintain our supply base. A step down in the current production ramp for the F-35 means some people will lose their jobs. It also means reduced volume for suppliers, and that means costs go up. More importantly, it puts a good program in a very tenuous position, a program that we cannot afford to lose. To reiterate, Mr. Chairman, we at Pratt Whitney are better able than smaller companies to deal with short-term implications of sequestration. But make no mistake, it's dangerous to the warfighter, for us as a business, for our supply chain companies, and for us as a nation. Again, I appreciate your perseverance on this important topic and for your allowing me to be here today.
David Hess is the president of Pratt & Whitney, testifying at a House Armed Services Committee hearing this morning on sequestration and how it will affect industry. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, we'll link this hearing up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so that you can watch it and learn more about it anytime you want. Coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the last of the four witnesses at this hearing today, Della Williams of Williams Pyro, is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Danette Campbell, Patent and Trademark Office Telework Coordinator, on a recent client virtualization solutions panel discussion sponsored by GovConnection, HP, and VMware.
The 2010 Telework Enhancement Act is driving federal telework policy, and I think agencies are taking a good long look at teleworking to prepare for continuity of operations, return on investment associated with real estate cost avoidance, certainly employee attrition and retention. If you have a viable telework program, that really does position your agency to be an employer of choice.
VMware View helps federal IT leaders comply with the Telework Enhancement Act, meet COOP initiatives, and solve the access control dilemma. HP Thin clients have been certified to work with VMware View Manager. This end-to-end solution allows you to simplify desktop management, reduce costs, improve data protection, and promote compliance. GovConnection is your one-stop resource for all of your IT projects. Visit govconnection.com/federalVDI for more details today.
Time is running out. Congress has until September 30th to pass agency spending bills for 2013. What's the latest on your agency's funding? How much will your budget be cut? And how will sequestration play a role? FederalNewsRadio.com's budget tracker has the latest on the 12 annual appropriations bills. Follow your agency's funding as it makes its way through the House and Senate and to President Obama's desk. Find the budget tracker online at federalnewsradio.com. Search budget tracker.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The House Armed Services Committee's hearing on sequestration today featured testimony from four witnesses who are leaders in the defense industrial base. Robert Stevens of Lockheed Martin, Sean O'Keefe of EADS North America, Pratt & Whitney's David Hess, and this highlight of testimony from Della Williams, president of Williams Pyro.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify on sequestration implementation options and the effects on national defense industry perspectives. My name is Della Williams, and I am the president and CEO of Williams Pyro in Fort Worth, Texas. Williams Pyro is a woman-owned small business that designs and manufactures innovative products, including custom cables, connectors, adapters, automated test equipment, and intelligent power management systems. Our products have improved the safety of flight line maintainers, reduced aircraft downtime, boosted the buying power of the defense and procurement dollar. We currently have 89 employees who continue to amaze me every day. I've been here since day one. As a manufacturer and part of the defense industry chain, defense supply chain, I very much appreciate your focus on defense industry and the impact of the impending cuts in defense spending set to begin on January 1, 2013. While I wish I were here under better circumstances and the impending threat of these wholesale budget cuts is a deep concern to me. My goal today is to put a face and a name to what is rather cavalierly discussed in the press as sequestration. Most people would associate defense cuts with the big Tier 1 defense contractors, which are represented by several of my colleagues here today. Supporting every one of these large integrators on dozens of programs are thousands of Tier 2 and Tier 3 suppliers, most small and medium-sized businesses, who design and manufacture what seems like small parts. Moreover, the defense supply chain companies collectively employ millions of hardworking people who each support spouses and children and communities. So these cuts will not just impact a few companies. These cuts will flow down the supply chain and through the broader economy. They will impact companies like mine and threaten the jobs of thousands of skilled workers who work at them. In fact, a report released last month by the National Association of Manufacturers concludes that by 2014, the cuts in defense spending enacted last year, combined with the cuts set for January 1, 2013, will result in the loss of more than 1 million jobs, increasing the unemployment rate by almost 1%. Just in Texas alone, this means a loss of more than 100,000 jobs. If small business, and I would submit even further manufacturing, is an engine of economic growth, why are we making decisions that will inevitably stall that engine? The budgetary issues the federal government is facing are the same ones that I, as a small manufacturer and a taxpayer, deal with every day in my own business. Analysts say the defense industry is faced with several choices. Either exit the market, double down on defense by buying your competitors, or weather the storm. At Williams Pyro, however, we have chosen to invest in product development. These are major investments for a small business, but we are committed to developing products that will meet the military's operational and procurement requirements. I believe that this dedication to providing innovative products for the defense industry helps to illustrate the potential impact sequestration will have on my business and many others. Sequestration, as is being discussed, will create a mass exodus of talent and skill to other industries. Williams Pyro presently has almost 90 employees, including machinists, assemblers, and R&D engineers, experienced in mechanical, electrical, software, firmware, hardware, and manufacturing. These jobs are in jeopardy. What is being billed as a stopgap budget fix will have lasting effects on our defense capabilities for years to come. The switch will just not get flipped back on to reverse that trend. Moreover, the deep personnel and program cuts will threaten our national security. Indeed, the United States could lose our technological and strategic advantage and never get it back. In conclusion, I urge members of Congress to go back and sharpen your pencils. Sequestration is cosmetic surgery with a chainsaw. Working together, we can solve this, but we need to do it smartly and strategically while keeping the economy moving and defending this great land. Thank you again for inviting me to appear before you to talk about this very important issue.
A hearing on sequestration in the House Armed Services Committee today. Della Williams, the president of Williams Pyro, testifying there on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Some questions for Ms. Williams, for Sean O'Keefe of VADS, David Hess of Pratt & Whitney, and Robert Stevens of Lockheed Martin. From the chairman of the committee, Congressman Buck McKeon, when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What does big data really mean? It means your agency can gain insight with analytics for large data sets. Go fast with data-intensive workloads and keep everything with secure, boundless data storage. That's what you can do with an agile data infrastructure, but only if it's from NetApp. And delivered by NetApp partners like Worldwide Technology, WWT's fast mobile data center solution offers a powerful, low-cost alternative to traditional data centers. Learn more at netappgov.com.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest and partner, Lauren Piana, who's a principal at Odin Feldman and Pittleman in the Labor and Employment Practice Group. To know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com or give us a call at Odin Feldman & Pittleman at 703-218-2100.
Dan Doherty, VP of EMC Federal.
EMC would like to thank the federal government for the trust and confidence it has shown in EMC. Our business is growing very quickly, and because of that, we have positions open across our organization. EMC is a great company, and we welcome those who want to be part of meeting the mission of our government. We especially welcome veterans and those who have served our country. Thank you.
Apply for openings today at emc.com/jobs. EMC is an equal opportunity employer.
It happened September 11th.
Our nation's capital.
The heart of America's defenses.
It changed America forever.
And it united America.
It's time to give future generations a place to learn what happened.
Help us build the Pentagon Memorial Visitor Education Center.
Please make an online contribution at www.pentagonmemorial.org.
Are you a rising government leader? Do you want to inspire and recharge? Well, then the next generation of government training summit is for you. The OPM-approved training event is brought to you by GovLoop and Young Government Leaders. The two-day summit is designed for and by energetic government leaders. This year's training will be held July 26th and 27th at the JW Marriott here in Washington, D.C. Head over to nextgengov.com. That's nextgengovt.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The House Armed Services Committee looking at sequestration this morning from the industry perspective. The title of the hearing, Sequestration Implementation Options and the Effects on National Defense, Industry Perspectives, and the witnesses all leaders in the defense industry. Robert Stevens of Lockheed Martin, David Hess of Pratt & Whitney, Sean O'Keefe of EADS North America, and Della Williams, the president of Williams Pyro, all testifying. You've heard them throughout the hour. And this highlight includes questions from the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Congressman Buck McKeon.
I think we... on this committee probably all understand more than perhaps the rest of the Congress how serious these impacts will be on our military and on our industrial base. But you've laid out even further these problems. I have a series of questions that probably could be answered very briefly. I would encourage you to do that so that we get these things on the record, which will help us as we go forward. Based on your testimony, it appears to me that you believe if sequestration goes into effect January 2nd, there will be job losses. Can you each confirm at this time that layoffs are reasonably foreseeable?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Do you believe that you are obligated by either the spirit of the letter of the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification, known as the WARN Act, to give conditional notices to your employees that may be laid off as a result of sequestration in advance of making a final determination regarding which specific employees will be let go?
Sir, given the uncertainty in this environment today, yes, we do.
May I... I'd like that answer from each of you, but you have a specific history regarding the presidential helicopter that's very important. Could you just expand on that a little bit as to your history there?
I can, sir. With respect to the termination of the VH-71 helicopter, where we knew there would be layoffs at a particular site in Owego, New York, but we didn't know which employees would be laid off, we did not issue WARN notices at the time of that termination, opting rather to do internal planning to see if we could replace the worker in another assignment, either in that location or another location, look at dimensions of the business we might have to provide some flexibility here. That process took about 45 days. In the subsequent evaluation of the termination claim that is typical in a termination for convenience environment, we have an opinion from the Defense Contract Audit Agency that said we should have acted more timely and that the costs associated with that 40 5 days may well not be allowable. And viewed, I believe, in their draft opinion that our actions were unreasonable, that we waited an unreasonably long period of time. So experiences like that inform us in an odd way of the compelling requirement to take timely action and not allow the ambiguity of the situation to accrue against the interests of the company, even though in that case our preference was, in our judgment, to act prudently and see if we could move the employees around.
And you're still in litigation on that issue, as I understand.
It's a negotiation over the termination, yes, sir. It's not been concluded yet.
Thank you. Mr. O'Keefe.
Yes, sir. No, I concur entirely with your question that, yes, indeed, we will be, as a matter of spirit of the law, compelled to do something in that regard, yes.
Mr. Hess.
We would certainly abide by the requirements of the Warren Act. Now, we have certain advantages in our business that Mr. Stevens doesn't have. Mr. Stevens' business, roughly 80% of it is defense. At Pratt Whitney, roughly 25% of our business is defense. So depending on what's happening in the other elements of the business, the commercial environment, we might have the potential, the opportunity to redeploy people. But it's far from certain, and certainly when you're looking at budget cuts of the order of magnitude that sequestration would involve, potentially another 10 to 14% on top of the 10% budget reduction that's already being implemented today. Certainly, there would be scenarios where we'd be looking at proportional headcount reductions.
Thank you. Ms. Williams.
I don't believe we're covered under the Warren Act because we're less than 100 employees. However, if that changes, absolutely. And even if it doesn't change, if we don't get some contracts soon, and I don't see how we'll be able to get keep our employees.
That's Della Williams, president of Williams Pyro, at a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee this morning on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour looks at issues the Pentagon is dealing with. Hearing from voices both inside and outside the building. Today's focus on voices from industry. Della Williams is one. Sean O'Keefe of VADS North America. David Hess of Pratt & Whitney. And Robert Stevens of Lockheed Martin, the others. More info on that hearing later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next.